I apologize for not having my makom sheets for you. But on the other hand, I was told that this has the best air conditioning. So it's a little bit of a trade-off. How does that volume control sound? It feels very loud to me. Does it sound appropriate? Okay, it's booming in my right. Okay. So when I was told that the topic this morning would be women in Tanakh and Talmud, so coming from the Talmud perspective, I thought that a topic related to the broader theme of women's obligation in mitzvos, which is most well known in the connection of the concept of mitzvos aseh shahazman grama, what the Talmud tells us about there being a distinction between mitzvos that are, we'll call them time bound for now. We'll see that how to define it is a little bit of a question, but for now let's use the term time bound. So the Talmud, based on the Mishnah and Maseches Kedushin on Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph, tells us that women are exempt in general terms, from such mitzvos, from time bound mitzvos. So I thought it would be an opportune chance to talk a little bit about how that interacts with Sfiras HaOmer, being that we are in the middle of Sfiras HaOmer now, and particularly today being Lag BaOmer, a highlighted part of Sfiras HaOmer, it would be an opportunity to look at how those concepts interact, because we find some very interesting developments when we look at the two together, and hopefully it sheds a little bit of light both on the concept of mitzvah saseh shazman grama and on the concept of Sfiras HaOmer, and on these two concepts interacting with each other. So to begin with, so again, the Mishnah does tell us that if a mitzvah is time-bound, again, we're not sure if it's a great translation, we're not really sure how to deal with the phrase the Mishnah tells us, but a mitzvah that is zman grama, which literally sounds like it's caused by time, we'll see, it definitely doesn't seem to be a good translation, somehow a mitzvah tied into time, women are exempt from those commandments. And going on a little bit further in the Gemara, in Daf Lamed Daled Amud Aleph, so the Gemara gives us some examples of both. Examples of mitzvos of which women are exempt, which is not a long list, as we'll see. And those are considered to be time-bound. And examples of mitzvos which are not in this category, where women are obligated. Mitzvos she'ein hazman gram. So on the surface, one would think that Sfiras HaOmer, this obligation that we have from the Torah to count the Sfira every day of the 7 weeks between Pesach and Shavuos, one would think that this would probably be a pretty good example of something that is time-bound, both in terms of its theme, it seems to be very time-connected, and we'll talk about some of the details in a few minutes, and also just in terms of the mentality, here is a mitzvah which in terms of time is very high pressure. And we know that if we forget, if we remember, let's say a half hour after dark, or we didn't count the Sfira of the day before, so all of a sudden we're in trouble, because we have this rule within Sfiras HaOmer that we'll talk about a little bit as we go on, that if we miss a day, any one of these 49 days, so we're not permitted to keep counting, or at least we don't keep counting with a bracha, because it's somewhat of a dispute, so somehow it affects the further days after this, so that seems to be very time-sensitive, and it seems to be very time-pressured. And the guess would be that this is probably included in the list of time-bound mitzvahs. This is probably a mitzvah that we would assume that women should not be obligated in. And that was indeed the view of the Rambam, the view of the Sefer HaChinuch. Many of the Rishonim took this view, which seems to be the more intuitive perspective. The exception, which has generated quite a bit of discussion and will be the basis of a lot of what we'll talk about today, is a very short statement of the Ramban, Nachmanides, in his commentary to the Gemara in Kedushin. So he notes that when the Gemara there lists examples of mitzvos which are not time-bound, mitzvos in which women are obligated, so the Ramban says, you shouldn't think that the Gemara's list is exhaustive. You shouldn't think that the Gemara listed every such mitzvah. Because, says the Ramban, there are many mitzvos that are not listed, which are still included in this category, which are mitzvos that are not time-bound, mitzvos she'ein hazman grama, and women are obligated. And he gives you a few. He talks about kibud ava'im and mor ava'im, respect to parents should be put in this list. And together with his additions, he puts Sfiras HaOmer. And this has generated quite a lot of literature. Because again, our assumption would have been that Sfiras HaOmer is a classic mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. It seems to be very time-bound. It was the view of the Rambam. It was the view of probably almost all of the Rishonim. And here we have the Ramban saying, here's a good example of something which is not in that category. He doesn't explain. It's all there mixed in with his longer list. And he left it for the rest of us to try to figure out why he takes this position. Why is it that this is not included in this category? So we'll talk a little bit about trying to figure out why it is. But before going to that point, let's just try to discuss for a minute, so what has the practice been? So what do we do, halacha l'maisa, concerning this debate? So in practice, you don't find the Ramban's view really adopted in the halachic literature. So we don't have contemporary poskim who say that there's an obligation, clear obligation, min ha-Torah, an absolute obligation, for women to count Sfiras HaOmer. Okay, but even without saying that much, there's quite a bit of space. Because if we assume that the Rambam is right, the Sefer Achinuch is right, if we assume that women are indeed exempt, so what does that mean in terms of practice? So it's not so simple. Because the assumption is, of most Rishonim, that even if women are exempt from a mitzvah, so they can still volunteer to do it. As we see by the mitzvah of shofar, lulav, sukkah, these are mitzvahs which women are exempt from, and yet they commonly volunteer to partake in these mitzvahs. And the view of the Ashkenazi Rishonim, the view followed in Ashkenazi circles, is that not only can a woman volunteer to do these mitzvahs, but she can also volunteer to make a bracha, even though the bracha has this language, Asher Kedushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu, the language of the bracha says that we are obligated and commanded to do this. And even though women technically are not obligated, they're exempt in these particular commandments. So some of the Rishonim, the Sephardim Rishonim, and the Rambam thought that it was inappropriate to say such a bracha. But the Ashkenazi Rishonim, such as Rabbeinu Tam, and this is again the practice in the Ashkenazi circles, is that not only can women volunteer to do these mitzvahs, but they can also recite the bracha. They can also say Asher Kedushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu. Hi. So that's an interesting question. So that's a little bit relevant to this point as well. So the question was, if you decide to do a mitzvah that you're not obligated to do, and you do it consistently, so then does that become binding? Does that become somewhat of a nether, like a commitment, which in order to stop doing it, if you decide to stop doing it, you should perhaps need a formal hataras nedarim. So it's an interesting question, because it happens to be that the status of that whole procedure is part of the discussion here. So on the one hand, so we have the baseline point, which seems to be that women are exempt. That's the majority view. But in terms of practice, so seeing it as part of the larger category of mitzvah saseh, shazman, grama, so the attitude should be, as for example the Aruch HaShulchan takes, the great code of Jewish law, that this is a mitzvah that women can volunteer to do, and if they want, can make a bracha. The Magen Avraham is one of the primary commentaries on the side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch. The Magen Avraham went further than this, and it sounds like from his language that he thinks it's a little bit more than that, that it's not only that we allow volunteering, but that the practice has been that women have accepted this as an obligation, that for some reason it's been taken for granted, or it's been taken as the case, that women have accepted this as obligatory, and that that should be the attitude. That we should see it as functionally an obligation for women. There's a whole discussion what the basis for that is. It seems to be that it's just a basis in terms of logic, in terms of procedure. There are those who felt that it's comparable to Ma'ariv, for example, a Tfilas Ma'ariv, even for men. So the Gemara says that Tfilas Ma'ariv, the third prayer of the day, is not really an obligation. The Gemara has a language, it's a rishus, it's optional. But in practice, you don't find that that's what we tell people. We see people, we still tell people to get out of their house at 10 o'clock at night and go to Ma'ariv. So we don't assume in practice that it's optional. So here, the Rishonim already say that even though the Talmud calls it optional, we've accepted it on a communal level or on an individual level. That was a little bit of the debate, but we've accepted it as obligatory. So in practice, we believe that we treat Ma'ariv as functionally an obligation. So it sounds like the Magen Avraham is saying that women should relate to Sfiras HaOmer in the same way, that they should treat it as something that they've accepted as an obligation, and functionally it's as if it was a commandment from the Torah for them as well. So that's a whole debate about whether that model of Ma'ariv is appropriate or not, and that's a whole discussion, but that was the view the Magen Avraham took. However, going in the other direction, so the Mishneh Berurah thought that there should be a limitation, though. The Mishneh Berurah wrote that he felt, first of all, that the view in the Rishon that women are exempt is the dominant view. And he says the Magen Avraham's position that it's accepted to take this as obligatory, he says, we don't do that in our countries. He said that hasn't been the practice that he was familiar with. says, nonetheless, even if we don't see it as an obligation, it's still something that can be volunteered. However, he recommended that women shouldn't make a bracha on Sfiras Omer. Why not? If we recognize they can make a bracha on lulav, on sukkah, on shofar, in theory, most individuals don't make a bracha on shofar because the one blowing the shofar makes a bracha, but in theory, can make a bracha on these mitzvos. So why should Sfiras Omer be any different in Ashkenazi circles where we follow this view? So he quotes a sefer called the Shulchan Shlomo that was concerned with the following, that maybe this woman is going to accept upon herself to say Sfiras Omer, maybe she'll miss a day. So what's the problem with missing a day? So he doesn't spell out exactly what the problem with missing a day. So what it sounds like his concern is, and we have to figure out if this is really a problem for us, it might not be such a problem, sounds like what he's worried is, he's talking about the position that we've adopted the halacha, that if you miss a day of Sfiras HaOmer, so we don't let you continue counting, at least with a bracha. So the question is, what does that reflect? What does that mean? So many thought that it meant that Sfiras HaOmer is one big package, and in order to really do it properly, you have to do every one of the 49 days. And if you miss any one day, so after that you're out of the game, and you can no longer recite a bracha. Okay, so why does that mean you shouldn't start counting with a bracha? Because one might infer from there that if it's a problem to count after you miss a day, so really it was a problem to count before you miss a day too. Just you don't know that you're going to miss a day, so you do your best until you miss a day. But maybe in theory, retroactively, all the brachos that were recited on those first days are all wasted brachos. They're all brachos levatal. So maybe we should be concerned about that. So maybe we should say that if you're not really obligated in the mitzvah, you don't really have to be making these brachos, why get involved in a bracha which may turn out to be retroactively disqualified? So that appears to be the concern the Mishnah Berurah was raising. Now it's a question whether we necessarily have to consider that to be such a concern. First of all, even though it was the view of the Chida, it was one of the great Sephardi Gedolim, Chaim Yosef, David Azulay, so it was the view of the Chida that is the case, philosophically speaking, retroactively, all the brachos that were recited turn out to be for naught. But many thought that wasn't the case. Many thought that when you make a bracha on a mitzvah, and at the time that you're doing the mitzvah, it's in play, even if you find out later that something disqualifies, it doesn't retroactively cause a wasted bracha. So for example, let's say somebody makes a bracha on Netilas Yadayim because he wants to have bread. So if you're only going to have a crumb of bread, you don't make a bracha. If you're going to have a whole piece of bread, so you make a bracha. So let's say I make a bracha on Netilas Yadayim, and then I decide, you know what, I decide I want to go on Atkins now. I don't want to have the rest of the piece of bread. So the bracha I made on Netilas Yadayim because I changed my mind, that bracha, is that considered to be a wasted bracha? So the Ritva was of the opinion, and many quoted this opinion in practice, that no, at the time you made the bracha, it was valid, so we don't look backwards and say it's a problem. Hi.
Doesn't the question you're asking depend on whether you say Omer or La Omer, whether it's one mitzvah, whether each day is a mitzvah?
It might. You have to be a little bit creative to make it connect. It's in the broader sense. The truth is there are many questions which could connect to that. I don't think we'll have time to get to all of them, but if we wanted to focus specifically on that question of one or many, we probably could bring in that in a few other issues, but we're going to try to stick closer to the mitzvah of Seish Azman Grama implications. So in terms of how this affects this practice, so first of all, one reason not to be concerned is that we have a view that many of that poskim took, that retroactively we wouldn't say the brachos are wasted. In addition to that, Rav Soloveitchik's understanding of why you can't count if you miss a day was totally different. He didn't believe that it was all one package. He believed that every day was separate. The reason he says you can't keep counting is that functionally, in order to count, you have to have all the numbers before. You can't just count by saying 12. You can only count when you say 12 if you said 1 through 11. So therefore, it's a problem after you miss a day. But before you miss a day, all the numbers that you got up to are all fine. Those are all mitzvahs. It's only after you miss a day that it becomes a problem. So if Soloveitchik felt, you would never have this situation where retroactively, the first days that you counted were for nothing. So there are many reasons perhaps not to necessarily worry about the Mishnah Berurah's concern here. And indeed, there's a tshuvas written by Rav Harfenis, who's coming from a Zatmar perspective, who also thought that one wouldn't necessarily have to worry about the Mishnah Berurah's concerns, because he felt you could set up a reminder. He said you could have somebody whose job it is to tell you, don't forget to count Svira. And he added on that he looked in the original sefer the Mishnah Berurah was quoting, the Shulchan Shlomo, and says it sounds like from the Shulchan Shlomo that he also didn't think that there was a retroactive issue. But what was he concerned? He was concerned that maybe the woman would forget, and maybe she would know that you're not supposed to keep counting with the bracha after you miss a day. So he says, if that's the concern, so we can easily fix this. And nowadays people are aware of the salacha, and you can teach the salacha, so people will know if they miss a day, so they don't count with the bracha afterwards. So he thought, again, he's coming from a satmar perspective, but he thought we didn't have to worry about this concern that Mishnah Berurah quotes. And if a woman wants to volunteer to count, so then she should be able to count with a bracha, and that does seem to be in many circles a prevalent practice. Okay, so that's in terms of practice. So we see essentially this debate among the Rishonim. Not so much of a debate, because the Ramban is a little mysterious and not so much quoted the halacha, but we have this Ramban that we have to try to understand that tells us that Sfiras HaOmer is not an exemption for women. It's called a mitzvah zaseh she'ein hazman grama. It's not time-bound. In practice, presumably the view of most Rishonim that it is time-bound is probably dominant. But yet, at the same time, we find a range of opinions that it clearly seems to be something that one could volunteer to do. And there are opinions of the halacha that perhaps one should be encouraged to volunteer to do a Sfiras HaOmer, or maybe even go so far as the Magen Avraham sounds, that the practice has been that women have essentially taken on as an obligation and really should see it that way, the same way all of us see Maariv, women should see Sfiras HaOmer as essentially something that is strongly encouraged to take on. That's a widespread practice. So what I'd like to try to look at over the course of the next few minutes is how can we understand this Ramban? How can it affect our perspective of both Sfiras HaOmer and Mitzvah Saseh Shehazman Grama? And even if we don't accept the Ramban, but we accept the view that Sfiras HaOmer is for some reason distinct from the other positive mitzvahs that are time-bound, and that for some reason we're encouraging women all the more so to adopt this particular mitzvah, what can we understand about Sfiras HaOmer that either makes an exception or an encouraged practice exception that should give it that type of character? So that's what I tried to look at. And just from a technical perspective, by the way, it could be that the reason that there are those who maintain that women davka should volunteer to accept this mitzvah is because of the issue of the debate in the Rishonim. That here you have the Ramban saying that it is an obligation. So when it comes to lulav, when it comes to sukkah, when it comes to shofar, none of the Rishonim thought that women are obligated in this. So it's clear that there's an exemption. So okay, so you can volunteer to do such mitzvahs. But when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer, maybe the fact that there was one great Rishon, the Ramban, who seemed to say that women are obligated, that could itself explain why it should be treated a little differently, why maybe there should be an attitude that this should be something that we should take special care to maybe look at. So to try to look a little bit at why it might be that the Ramban would say such a thing, why would he tell us this opinion which seems to be counterintuitive and against the view of all of his colleagues, that Sfiras HaOmer is not the mitzvah saseh shehazman grama? So there are a number of approaches, and I'd like to look at each approach, or some of the approaches, and see what it could tell us about this whole concept, again, both of Sfiras HaOmer and mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. So the first approach we could mention was suggested by the responsa, by the Tshuvas Divrei Malkiel, with Malkiel Tenenbaum. So what's the easiest way to deal with a problematic text? You have a text, you can't understand why it says what it says. So what's the easiest way to deal with it? You say it's a typo. You say it's a mistake. So that was the view of the Divrei Malkiel. Divrei Malkiel said it must be the Ramban didn't mean to say this. It must mean that it was a typo. So if it was a typo, so we have to have an alternative theory. So then what did the Ramban mean to say? You know, it didn't just fall there on the page. How did it, what was it supposed to say? So he gives us two possibilities of what it could have meant. Either maybe it should have been in the preceding paragraph, that when he lists the mitzvos that women are exempt from, and he says that's not a complete list, so he meant to put Sfiras HaOmer in that list, and somehow it got moved into this list. Okay. Or maybe it belongs in this list, but maybe it shouldn't have said Sfiras HaOmer. Maybe it's talking about the karbanos, that the whole sacrificial order, for the most part, we're going to assume that women are obligated in that as well, which is why we also recommend that just as we tell the men to recite the karbanos every morning in davening, women should recite karbanos as well. So maybe that's what the Ramban said. So that's one approach to say that we don't have to confront the problematic text. Essentially, it's a typo. Essentially, it's a mistake. We never find those approaches so satisfying. Assume it's unlikely that it was a mistake. Could be, but under the assumption that it's not a mistake, so we'll try to look a little further. What else could possibly be at hand here? So some suggest that maybe what's relevant is that Sfiras HaOmer is actually maybe two mitzvahs, which is not the view of most Rishonim. Most Rishonim take the view, such as the Rambam, that Sfiras HaOmer is one mitzvah. One mitzvah every night to count the sphere. The issue is, there is a statement the Gemara has in Maseches Menachos, that the Gemara has in the context of a longer discussion. The Gemara says, mitzvah lemimne yomei, or mitzvah lemimne shvuei. It's a mitzvah to count the days, and it's a mitzvah to count the weeks. So it sounds like those are two halves of the mitzvah, and that's what we do every night. We say today is 13 days, which is 1 week and 6 days. We do both. We have one track for the days, one track for the week breakdown. So the Gemara lists it as two ideas. So there was one view, the Rabbeinu Yerucham, who said that really this constitutes two separate mitzvahs. The mitzvah to count the days is one, mitzvah to count the weeks is another. And it's interesting, actually, that Beis Halevi has a short response. To Beis Halevi was the original Rabbi Yosef Ber Soloveitchik. Rabbi Yosef Del Soloveitchik, who taught here, his great-grandfather was the original Rabbi Yosef Ber Soloveitchik. So he has a short response in his Chuvas where he suggests, he doesn't really come to a conclusive end on this point, but he says that this whole concern that we have, that if you miss a day, you can't keep counting. So the Beis Halevi said that maybe, not sure, but maybe we could make an exception that, let's say you forget the 12th day, the 11th day, something like that, but maybe on the 14th day you can count with a bracha again, on the 14th and the 21st and the 28th and the 35th, that maybe every every weekday, every day that completes a week, we should allow a bracha again, because it's considered to be a separate mitzvah. He's not sure if this should be accepted. Other poskim haven't really weighed in on this, so in later sources you see the Beis Halevi referenced on this point. He's the only one who really said it, and he wasn't sure, so it's not clear whether this is really true la'alacha. But it's a reflection of this idea that maybe there are two concepts. So there were those who wanted to suggest, there's a sefer that was written by Rabbi Simcha Elberg, who for many years was the editor of the rabbinical journal Hapardes. So he has in his sefer that maybe we could say that this is a clue, that there is a difference between the mitzvah of the days and the weeks. And the weeks is specifically patterned after the bringing of the Omer. That's what the Torah says. We just read it yesterday. Sheva Shabbosos Tmimos. The idea of the 7 weeks specifically is connected to the bringing of the Omer offering. So maybe since women are obligated in that, so therefore that mitzvah specifically is the source to obligate women. So maybe all the Ramban meant was they're obligated in counting the weeks, and they're not obligated in counting the days. It's questionable whether that helps so much, especially because even Rabbi Elberg and others who quote this don't conclude like that answer, because they note that on theory it makes sense, but there's indications from the Gemara and the Sefer Shabbos and elsewhere that actually this bringing of the Omer, even though women are obligated in Karbanos in general, this may have been an exception. So it's not clear that that's really going to be a path into an answer here, but it is interesting for what it reflects, especially because another issue with using it as an answer is the same Rabbeinu Yerucham. Rabbeinu Yerucham was one of the Rishonim. The same Rabbeinu Yerucham who wants to say that there's two separate mitzvos. So he maintained that this second mitzvah of counting the weeks nowadays is only rabbinical, is only midrabanan, even though it's in the Torah. We read it yesterday morning. But it's connected to the bringing of the Omer, and the time when we don't bring the Omer, when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. So that's a rabbinical command, which does actually open up a whole new approach to this issue. And this is something that many others thought might, in theory, be relevant, that we have to consider the question of, is Sfiras HaOmer nowadays an obligation min HaTorah or an obligation min HaRabbanan? So again, if we paid attention to Kriyas HaTorah yesterday morning, we would say it's clearly min HaTorah. We read it in the Psukim, perfectly timed for right in the middle of Sfiras HaOmer, right before Lag BaOmer. We read the parasha that tells us the commandment of the Sfiras HaOmer. Sounds like it's a mitzvah min HaTorah. Hi?
I missed my women
bringing carbon. So it actually sounds, in general, the women are obligated in the korbanos. Happens to be that it does sound like from the Gemara, like you're right, that it is a mitzvah say Shazman Grandma. So the initial perspective was based on the assumption that all of the korbanos are applicable to men and to women. But in the conclusion, he backed away from that approach because it does sound like that is time-bound and that does not really going to help us. But what's useful for us is it introduces this idea, actually, that maybe nowadays Sfiras HaOmer as a whole is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. So Rabbeinu Yerucham was unique in that he split between the days and the weeks. But most of the Rishonim didn't split. So a lot of the Rishonim felt that Sfiras HaOmer today is a rabbinical obligation. That nowadays we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have a Hakravas HaOmer, so therefore this mitzvah is not in force. And the fact that we do it, that is only a rabbinical commandment, apparently in the category of Zecher LaMikdash, that there are things that we do, sometimes a rabbinical commandment is to stop us from sinning somehow. And sometimes it's not there necessarily for that, but it's there as a way of reminding us of what once was and what, God willing, will be. So therefore, maybe this is such a case. So a lot of the Rishonim took this view, and some felt that this is perhaps the majority view, that Sfiras HaOmer is a mitzvah derabbanan. Not all the Rishonim felt like this. The Rambam didn't feel this way. Rambam felt that it was a din min haTorah. But there were many who felt that this is the case, and it may actually be the normative view, that Sfiras HaOmer is a din derabbanan. So how would that help us? What difference would it make? So the truth is, there is an interesting debate among the Rishonim whether or not the exception of mitzvah sasei hazman grama applies to rabbinical commandments. And it was the view of, let's say, for example, Rashi in his commentary to Maseches Brachos, that's a major view, and Rabbeinu Tam, his grandson, one of the great authors of the Tosfos, and the Or HaChaim and others, that when it comes to rabbinical commandments, there's no exception, there's no mitzvah sasei shazman grama concept. This only applies to mitzvahs min haTorah. It doesn't apply to mitzvahs rabbanan at all. Now, not all the Rishonim agreed. For example, Tosfos, other than Rabbeinu Tam, thought this wasn't the case. Tosfos over there in Brachos and Tosfos elsewhere thought, oh, it's not true. In fact, we have a counterweight to the concept of mitzvah sasei shazman grama. We have a concept that sometimes comes to undo it, which is called Afhein Hayu Ba'oso Hanes. So for example, when it comes to Megillas Esther, the obligation to hear the Megillah, when it comes to the obligation to drink four cups of wine Pesach night, these seem to be in time-bound mitzvos. But the Gemara says, no, we obligate women in this because of this principle that the miracle that's being commemorated was applicable to women as well. So therefore, that apparently undoes mitzvah sasei shazman grama. So some of the Rishonim thought that whole principle only applies to mitzvahs derabbanan, and therefore it's only these mitzvahs derabbanan that would otherwise have been exempt. So not everyone agrees with Rashi's idea that the distinction doesn't apply on a rabbinical level. It was a debate among the Rishonim. But there was this view that some had, such as Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, that if we're dealing with rabbinical mitzvahs, so then there's no distinction. Then there's no such idea, mitzvahs sasei shazman grama, it's only true for Torah concepts. Hi. They're obligated, right? That we obligate men and women equally. Now, that might be helpful if we want to say that Sfiras HaOmer is drabanan, but it's problematic on a couple of levels. First of all, the whole sheet itself we have to figure out a little bit. This idea, Rashi's view in general, that there should be a difference between mitzvos min haTorah and mitzvos drabanan, that rabbinical mitzvos don't have this concept. So that's a difficult view. We have to figure out what that means. Because normally we believe that, in addition to some textual challenges, which we could deal with a little more directly, but in addition to that, just on a conceptual level, so we normally have a rule that kol d'takan rabbanan kein d'raisa tiknu, that whatever the rabbis instituted, when they made their laws, they patterned themselves after the way Torah laws were made. They learned how to make laws based on looking at the Torah. So generally, the rabbis try to follow the same pattern as the way Torah laws are made. So if we have such an idea that when it comes to Torah laws, that mitzvah sasei shazman grama, women are exempt, so one would think that the same policy should apply to the rabbanans as well. And one might say that, especially in such a case, like it's one thing if you don't want to apply that logic to Megillah or Neros Hanukkah or Neros Shabbos, something that's a completely rabbinical invention. But here, if it's not a rabbinical invention, it's just a rabbinical continuation of the mitzvah that's in the Torah. So if the Torah mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is a mitzvah sasei shazman grama, so it's a little hard to believe that the rabbis made a rabbinical version that has such a deviation, that doesn't fit the same pattern. So can we answer these questions? So I think so. I think, to take one at a time, so I think first of all, to look at Rashi's view might clue us into something very interesting. And it might be a useful principle in addressing this whole issue. That we have to try to figure out that we don't have clear direction from the Talmud. When the Talmud tells us that women are exempt from mitzvah saseisha as man grama. So why is that? And I'm saying why in a broad sense before even getting to a specific answer. Are they saying that there's something about time-bound commitments that women are exempt from? Or are they saying, no, it's not about the concept of being time-bound. It's that there's a handful of mitzvos that the Torah exempted women from. Now, what's the clue to what those mitzvos are? They happen to have this common element of being time-bound. But time-bound by itself is not necessarily a problem. So that would affect the question of rabbinical laws. Because if we're saying that the Torah in general exempted women from time-bound commitments, so then maybe the rabbis should have continued that policy. But if it's not really that that's the issue, maybe it's not that the rabbis really exempted women from time-bound commandments. The Torah exempted women from a handful of commandments. The clue to those commandments is they're time-bound. But if the rabbis came and made new ones, even if those mitzvahs are time-bound, so maybe that doesn't necessarily have to be added to the category. Maybe there's no reason to necessarily extend that. So Rashi's view that there's a distinction only on a biblical level, but not on a rabbinical level, that's very helpful, whether or not we follow the halacha. It's very helpful because maybe it tells us something about mitzvah saseisha as man grama, that maybe it's not an issue in being time-bound. Maybe that's just a clue to what the mitzvahs are. But something else that would be time-bound that's not in this list wouldn't necessarily have the same policy. And that might be very important for trying to address the question at hand. Now, the other question that we mentioned about would it make sense, even if there was such a policy by rabbinical law, so what about when it comes to the specific mitzvah that's already in the Torah, and the rabbis came and said, do this mitzvah even now, to make a distinction that wasn't there is surprising. So we could say that maybe we have to try to understand what the idea is. So is it that the Torah wanted us to count Sfiras HaOmer, and now when there's no Beis HaMikdash, the rabbis also wanted us to count Sfiras HaOmer? Or maybe no, maybe the Torah wanted us to count Sfiras HaOmer. And now, there's no Beis HaMikdash, what do the rabbis want us to do? Not to count Sfira, to remember the Beis HaMikdash, to have some type of memorial that there was a Beis HaMikdash and God willing there will be. So that mitzvah shouldn't be understood as a mitzvah of counting Sfira. It should be understood as a mitzvah of remembering the Beis HaMikdash. So it's understandable that that mitzvah maybe would be applied differently, and that should apply not only to men, but to men and to women as well. There's a related theory that some of the Sfarim have, for example, by Shlomo Werman, a great Talmud Chacham from Queens. So he discusses in general the discussion how we relate to rabbinical commandments as a whole. That maybe we don't see them as independent concepts the way Torah ideas are, but rather as part of a broad directive of listening to rabbinic authority, of listening to Chazal. And therefore, maybe it also has different categories, and maybe that's why there's no mitzvah saseh shazman grama distinction according to that. So all of those approaches, all of that could help us to relate to this. But at the end of the day, it's unlikely that this explains the Ramban. Because even if this could technically explain to us why we might relate to mitzvah to Sfiras HaOmer differently, it's unlikely that that's what the Ramban meant, because the Ramban doesn't say, oh, by the way, Sfiras HaOmer is mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, but women should do it anyway. What he says is this should be included in the list of mitzvah saseh she'ein hazman grama. So that's a difficult position. We can't really get at it from the back door. We can't really say that it's obligatory for a different reason because it's a Rabbanan or something like that. We have to really address the mitzvah more fundamentally because that seems to be the perspective the Ramban is taking. So either we have to try to understand mitzvah saseh shehazman grama differently, or we have to see that maybe there's some reason to make an exception. So is there perhaps, let's say, some gezeiras hakasav here? Is there perhaps some Torah dictate which sets aside this principle? So first of all, we just alluded to a minute ago that maybe mitzvah saseh shehazman grama itself is basically a Torah dictate. Maybe it's not a principle that we can necessarily understand as being based on the time-bound quality, but maybe it is, the Torah is essentially saying, this handful of mitzvos women are exempt from. If so, then maybe there's a reason to see Sfiras HaOmer is outside of that list. So one suggestion, for example, was made by a contemporary Gadol, Leo Schlesinger, in his Tshuvas Shaul and Adarshan, that he suggests that maybe it's relevant, and if you look, read in yesterday's Kriyas HaTorah, that Sfiras HaOmer is not given a date in the Torah, that all the other mitzvos of the Moadim that we read about has a date, and then when we get into Sfiras HaOmer, so it's a whole different story. So it starts counting when? Mimacharas HaShabbos, the day after Shabbos. So we have to figure out, working backwards, when that is. And then Shavuos itself doesn't have a date, which is a very interesting thing. And so maybe there's something special about all of these mitzvahs, about Svira and Shavuos. Maybe even though it ends up being a time thing, maybe it's still separated from its time source. We have to see if that kind of logic is going to help us. The other way to see things as an exception is that maybe we're going to say that essentially the Torah somehow is indicating to us that Sfiras Omer should be viewed differently. Like we see, for example, there are two mitzvos which are well-known mitzvos, which really should be mitzvos asei shazman grama, but the Talmud tells us that the Torah is cluing us in otherwise. I'm referring to, on the one hand, Kiddush, on the other hand, matzah. Those are mitzvos which, looking at the details of Kiddush Friday night, of matzah on the first night of Pesach, those are mitzvos that should have been considered to be mitzvos asei shazman grama. Women should be exempt from these mitzvos. But the Gemara says unequivocally it's not the case. Women are obligated in Kiddush and they're obligated in eating matzah. Because we derive from Sukkim that there's a connection. When it comes to Kiddush, we understand there's a connection between Zechirah Shabbos, which is Kiddush, and Shmirah Shabbos, which is abstaining from Malacha. So the Gemara says whoever is obligated in abstaining from Malacha is obligated in Kiddush. So women are equally obligated in Kiddush. And when it comes to matzah as well, so the Gemara understands there's a textual connection between eating matzah and not eating chametz. So the Gemara says, whoever is prohibited in eating chametz, meaning men and women, are also obligated in eating matzah. So maybe there's a clue here also that Sfiras Omer is different. So the Avnei Nezer, who was the great Sachachav Rebbe, one of the most creative poskim, so he had the idea that maybe the fact that the Sfiras Omer is phrased as, we said, Mimacharas HaShabbos, the day after Pesach starts, so maybe that's linking it into Pesach. And since we see that when it comes to Pesach, when it comes to the Seder night, most of the mitzvot are applicable to women as well, certainly matzah and the dominant themes. So therefore, maybe Sfiras HaOmer is seen as an extension of that, so that's as if the Torah is saying there's an obligation there as well. So that's one way to look at it as an exception. Hi.
Well, I'm just thinking that in the Haggadah itself, you have the first night of
So it's an interesting question, right? So it's an interesting question in practice. The truth is, so people have different customs when it comes to that. And it's interesting because many shuls will recite Sfiras HaOmer the first night before the Seder, the second night of Pesach. In davening, they'll, at the end of Maariv, they'll count Sfiras HaOmer. And they won't necessarily count it at the Seder. But it's true. Second night, did I say first night? Sorry, I'm, right, the second night, excuse me, second night of Pesach. So, sorry? Testing, exactly, so you're paying attention. So the second night, so there are many shuls where they'll count in shul, and they're not going to wait for the Seder. But on the other hand, it is printed in the Haggadah, as you point out, and there are those who had a practice specifically not to count in shul that night, and to wait until after the Seder. So maybe there is such an assumption that there is some connection. Of course, it's a little bit difficult, because by Torah law and in Eretz Yisrael, there is no second Seder. So there will never be a connection between the Seder and the counting sphere. But in the Chutz La'aretz, where we have a second Seder, so there are those who felt there was supposed to be some connection specifically between the Haggadah and the Seder, so maybe that does clue us into something. A little bit of a different spin was suggested by a post that passed away a little while ago. The Tshuvas Kinyan Torah B'Halacha was written by Avram David Horowitz, who was originally from Switzerland and was a Dayan in Yerushalayim. So he thought that maybe what's relevant is there's a prohibition. There's a prohibition of eating chadash, of eating the new grains, which is made permissible by the bringing of the Hakravas HaOmer. So maybe that shouldn't be viewed as a positive mitzvah. It should be viewed as a negative mitzvah, that this is something that's necessary to undo a prohibition. So maybe that's why it should be an exception. That's what the Torah is telling us by connecting Sfiras HaOmer to Hakravas HaOmer. There were others who thought that maybe it should be an exception because of the principle, because of the understanding of mitzvah sasei shazman grama. The question is, what is the understanding of mitzvah sasei shazman grama? Why do we have this exception? So we don't know. We don't really know what it is about. The Talmud doesn't tell us. The most common theory that's quoted in the halachic literature, I'm not saying whether it's the only way to see things or not, but the way the poskim often work off of, is there is a statement of the Abu Dram that's often quoted that understands it to be because of household responsibilities, that there's some type of overwhelming household commitment that excludes mitzvah sasei shazman grama. That would be relevant if we see it more about being time-bound than about time-bound being a clue to what mitzvahs we're talking about, which is what we suggested before, that maybe seeing it as only about Torah law would maybe push us in a different direction. But if you accepted the Abu Dram's theory that it's about that, so then there was some of the poskim who thought that maybe this should be an exception, either because, as one sefer, the Tshuva Siach Yitzchak puts it, that there was a custom that some women had not to do malacha during the nighttime of Sfira, so then it's a set aside time already anyway. But others thought that, no, this is not really considered to be such an imposition, since it's just a statement, it only involves one sentence, so maybe that doesn't get in the way of anything else, so maybe looking into the reason, into the theory, assuming the theory is correct, assuming we have the authority to do that, a lot of assumptions, so then maybe one can make a case that it should be separated from this whole issue of mitzvah seh shazman grama. Others thought that it's not so simple, even if it's just a statement, but it's a statement that has to be precise, and you have to keep track, and you have to sometimes pay attention to a lot of things. So they weren't so excited about that theory, so for many reasons one could question whether that's a relevant theory or not, but that's something that a number of the Svarim brought up and suggested might possibly be relevant. So those are some of the approaches that we see, but by far the most popular approach is the following approach. And this approach is really its earliest sources. It's based on a comment of the Shagas Aryeh. The Shagas Aryeh was one of the great early Achronim. He lived in the late 1600s, and a little bit later, he met the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was born in 1720. So the Vilna Gaon met, when he was a young man, he met the Shagas Aryeh, and the Shagas Aryeh was an old man. So he's a little bit older than the previous generation from the Vilna Gaon. And he wrote a commentary on the Talmud, the some of the Masechtas in the Talmud, a handful of Masechtas called the Turi Evan. So in the Turi Evan, he has an approach, and many later sources had a similar approach, which they thought became a very popular approach, which many Svarim seem to adopt this as their favorite approach. And we have to figure out what it perhaps implies. That the Turi Evan notes that this is not the only questionable thing in the Ramban's list. It says it's also Bikurim, the obligation of bringing the first fruits. So that also was limited only to certain times of the year. And yet the Ramban says as well that women are obligated in this. So he says in that case, and it seems to be true by Sfiras HaOmer as well, he says, what does it mean when we say mitzvah saseh shazman grama? So despite how the language might sound, we have to kind of take a different approach. He says, mitzvah saseh shazman grama, that means when the mitzvah wouldn't have to be at a certain time, could in theory be done at a different time, but for whatever reason the Torah said it's going to be now. It's going to be limited by this time. So that's called a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. But a mitzvah that by its nature is in time, by its nature is, let's say, responding to something else going on, says the Turi Evan, that's not called mitzvah saseh shazman grama. So Bikurim can only be functionally at a certain time, can only be when the crops are being harvested. It's a limited period of time. Not because the Torah, so to speak, beyond us, said it's going to be this time, but because that's just the nature of what's going on. That's not called the mitzvah saseh shazman grama. So using similar logic, many of the Achronim, perhaps also most prominently, one of the Rashi Yeshiva of Slobodka, Rabbi Chezkel Burstein, who wrote the Sefer Divrei Yechezkel, took the approach, and many, many after him favored this approach. Sridi Eish favored this approach in his Tshuvas. That since here, you can only count this Omer when the Omer is happening. And the Omer is the process of the bringing of the Omer from the second day of Pesach until Shavuos. So you can't count the Omer on Purim. It's just not there. You can't count the Omer on Rosh Hashanah. You can only count the Omer during the days when it's actually coming. So therefore, it fits into this categorization that the Turi Evan and that others liked, that if it's not that the Torah said, here's a mitzvah, we're going to bind it into this time, but rather, the mitzvah is itself a response to something happening now, that's not called mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. So that's a fascinating idea. Hi.
Why didn't the Turi Evan quote this in
addition to what?
It seems like this is only logically inferred from the Turi
Evan. So why did he quote this? Okay, so that was where he had his discussion. He was coming elsewhere, but he didn't write on Kiddushin, so he's not writing on the Ramban. But he's explaining why you have this idea by Bikurim, and it seems to be this makes sense for this as well. So we have to think about what this means, because what it sounds like, again, is this kind of moves us away from a time-bound kind of definition, because functionally, they relate in the same way. These are mitzvahs that still are put into a certain time frame. So it puts us more towards the impression that the exemption is on mitzvos that somehow fit into a certain category, regardless of how they relate to us. And we have to try to understand what that category is. So perhaps what these achronim are telling us, and again this is far and away the most popular approach to this question, what these achronim seem to be telling us is that what the Torah told us, what the Gemara said, women are exempt from mitzvos asei shazman grama, it means that women are exempt from mitzvos where time is a limitation. If time comes in as a limit, as a boundary, so women are exempt from those mitzvos. But mitzvos that are about experiencing time, that are about living within time, as it comes, so that was never included in this rule. Mitzvos that are about functioning within the system of time and responding to it, that was something that applied to men and to women equally. Hi.
But what about the idea that
so that's interesting. We didn't talk about that so much, but that's a valid question as well, that we only focused on one reason to ask the question. You're right, there are two reasons to ask the question, that we could say that it's not only about the fact that it's between Pesach and Shavuos, but what about the fact that it's only at night? So the truth is, that was the debate among the Rishonim, that many Rishonim felt that you could count during the day as well, and the Rambam was one of them. Well, the Rambam is not a problem here, but the Rambam felt you could count during the day. It was Rabbeinu Tam who thought not. So on the one hand, we could take the view like those Rishonim that you could count during the day. That's why most Achronim kind of don't spend time on this question, because they assume that, yes, it's a valid question to start with, but we have half the Rishonim who say you can count during the day, so we'll assume like them. Even though one could argue that maybe counting during the day, or Soloveitchik felt maybe it wasn't even the mitzvah, maybe that was just a way to keep the count going, so then that would mess things up a little bit. But if you take this view among the Rishonim that you can count during the day, that seems to quickly, right, that seems to a deal. But you're right, that is something that was raised as another reason to see it as a mitzvah, sasesh, as my grau. But perhaps we could say that what these achronim who are telling us about this new category are saying, that if the mitzvah is about experiencing and responding to time, so that women are obligated in as well. And we take that view, so then we could say it not only by bikurim and not only by things like this, but maybe it has particular relevance to the whole mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. And maybe that's why Sfiras HaOmer was related to differently, even above and beyond other such mitzvahs. It's interesting, there's a contemporary sefer called the Birkas Kohens, organized Dala Torah. It was written by one of the Rosh Yeshivas in Kol Torah, Rav Shmuel Deutsch. So he suggested, he was also talking about the Ramban, but he's saying it a little bit differently, that maybe the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer should be related to, not as an action that we do, but that action is really just reflective of something else. That the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is that we are supposed to impose a new system of time upon the calendar. That we are supposed to see today not as May 2nd, or not as necessarily any other day on the calendar, but we are supposed to see today as the 33rd day of the Omer. And he points to the Ramban, that seems to understand things that way, that is the mitzvah. The mitzvah is essentially for us to take over this time period. Not to let time define us, so to speak, but for us to define the time, for us to come and to use this passage of time as something active that we are controlling, and that becomes a proactive system of character development between Pesach and Shavuos on the way to the Kabbalah HaTorah, on the way to receiving the Torah. So if that's the case, so then it's not only a reflection of the way these Achronim see it, but it's something even more than that. It's something that specifically Sfiras HaOmer is all about, not being subject to time, but is all about experiencing time from a proactive view, about taking over this process and redefining what these days will be. That these days will not simply be passages of days on the clock, on the calendar, but they will be days that we will take ownership of as part of our character development. Alpi Derech Hadrosh, we're almost out of time, ironically, but Alpi Derech Hadrosh, one might say it's interesting that we read yesterday this word, which provoked a lot of halakhic discussion, that the Torah tells us to read, to count, Sheva Shabbosos Tamimos, that we should count complete, perfect days. Now, what does that mean? Nobody's perfect. So what does it mean to count perfect days? So halachically, this had a lot of ramifications. This was the basis for the Bahag's view that you can't miss a day. This was the basis for some of the later Achronim who thought that we can't start Shavuos early because we have to let the process be perfectly over first. The view that the Sun had that we should dafka count sphere at the earliest part of the night to make sure we have a perfect count. This word, Tamimos, had a big impact on halacha. So what does it mean, Alpi Derech Hadrosh? Maybe one could suggest that it's interesting if we look elsewhere in the Torah. So where do we find this word coming up? A number of times, but some of the times we find it coming up is we have a mitzvah, where it comes out of the prohibition Tamim Tiyav Hashem Elokeinach, that we should be complete with God. And we also find it a reference to Avram Avinu, who's also considered to be Tamim. And Chazal tell us more specifically about Sarah, that when Sarah died, the opening psukim in Chayei Sarah, which tells us she was 127, and the rabbis tell us they were all perfect years. So Chazal have the expression there, quoting from the pasuk in Tehillim, Yodea Hashem Yimei Tamimim. She's considered to have Tamimim days. So maybe there's a theme that connects there, that when it comes to Tamim Tiyam Hashem Elokecha, so the Gemara in Pesachim says, what does that mean? It means you shouldn't be superstitious, you shouldn't look for forces outside of God. Specifically says the Gemara, you shouldn't look to fortune tellers. And perhaps what it's saying is that specifically that type of attitude, the attitude of consulting with an astrologer and saying, tell me, what will tomorrow bring for me? What will next week do to me? What will next month do to me? That's the opposite of Tamimus. And Sarah, by contrast, Chazal are calling her days Yimei Tamimim, Kulam Shavim Latova, that time never overtook her. She was able to always remain consistent in her tzidkus and in her qualities despite time. And therefore, perhaps we can say, Al Pi Derech HaDrush, count Sfiras HaOmer Tamimos, count a period independent of time, when you are complete with God, separate from the system of time. That we are imposing our own time structure on top of the existing calendar. And therefore, perhaps it's really an ideal example of this idea that Achronim have, that if time is not seen as a limitation, but rather it's something that we are experiencing, that's not called mitzvah sasei shazman grama, and therefore perhaps we can understand specifically why the Ramban would see it as an exception, Ramban would see it as something women are obligated in, and even if we don't accept the Ramban, why this overwhelming practice to see this as something that women are encouraged to volunteer to be a part of, maybe we could see why that is. And we'll just end on the note that the Dvar Yehoshua, was one of the great Dayanim in Tel Aviv a generation ago, wrote the fascinating Shubhas, his name was Dayan Yehoshua Ehrenberg, so he understood that since the whole process of Sfiras HaOmer is about preparing for Kabbalas HaTorah, it's about preparing ourselves to receive the Torah, and the Torah tells us, Hosorim Rebbeis Yaakov, this is specifically included women as well. So therefore it certainly makes sense based on the Kavanos HaTorah, the Ratzon HaTorah, that this is something that men and women should partake in equally, and therefore we're all encouraged to perhaps see Sfiras HaOmer as somewhat of a different concept. So there's a lot more to say about this, but again, ironically, we're out of time, so we will end now, and hopefully our attitude towards the Sfiras HaOmer, both for men and women, should be one that brings us closer to this type of development, this type of tamimus, in a sense, this type of perfection that the Torah is asking for us as we proceed to receive the Torah. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful Lag BaOmer.